to give product of a different structure from Miller's structures, but the rearrangement would fit into this scheme on the alpha hydroxy ketone rearrangement. Well, so that was the guiding principle of this. And if it turned out that Miller's work had really, if Dering's hypothesis of these structures was correct, then I think he would have taken more interest in it, because it would have fit into this scheme. But, here's what happened on that. He said, why don't you just look into this? I don't think these structures are right. I think what's going on is this alpha ketone rearrangement. But I haven't really done a lot of reading, and I haven't done a lot of thinking about what these structures might be. Why don't you just go into the library and read up? I did that. There were about 10 of those papers. And I collected all that stuff, all the notes that I had made, and there was no Xerox in those days. Take notes. And I took all that stuff home one weekend, and I laid it out, and it quickly became very clear to me that Miller was certainly wrong, but Dering was also wrong. And I mean, I don't say this with any glee, because he really hadn't put a lot of effort into this. He just had a hope that maybe this would fall into that category. But it was something completely different, and something not terribly interesting was what my hypothesis for this was, and it was something that I thought could be verified in a few rather simple, straightforward experiments. So I worked all that weekend. I was very excited about this, because I thought I saw the whole picture, and I took it into Dering on Monday and laid the whole thing out for him, and he said, well, that looks plausible, and I have a few more ideas about experiments that you could try, and why don't you go ahead and start off on that line. And it quickly became obvious that all of that was correct, that my hypothesis was correct, and within 11 months I did the whole job. And that involved not only this infrared thing, but also a lot of other structural work and transformations. Not only reformulating Miller's transformations, but finding other new transformations that verify the structure. But it was all very uninteresting chemistry, and it didn't lead anywhere. No, Dering didn't put anybody else on any problem like that after I finished. I did. And it confirmed my interest in natural products chemistry, because these reactions that Miller had reported were reactions of a oxidation product of a dimer of isohomogenol, which is the methyl ether of isobutanol. Can you visualize that? That's a propenyl side chain, and the methoxy group in the meta position, hydroxy group in the para position. That's homogenol. That's isoeugenol, and the methyl ether of that is isohomogenol. This methoxy compound undergoes an acid catalyzed dimerization to it's a hydrindane derivative. It's a phenylated, arylated hydrindane derivative. And then Miller carried out certain oxidation studies on that, and they led to these products. Well, what he was formulating as the products of oxidation seemed to me to be very improbable. He was attacking them at unactivated positions with the oxidizing agents. And all of the rationalizations of these structures seem to me to be very forced. Whereas, if you just assume that it wasn't what he thought, which was a hydroxy ketone, but instead was a diketone, which is my hypothesis, then everything fell into place. It was a diketone with that resulted from the wing opening of the hydro portion of the hydrogen. So, but that really made me think I was a natural products chemist, very naive. Yeah, right. Around the lab, I mean, that there's something like 18 people in the lab, and I was the only natural product, so-called. Oh, sure. I mean, Andy Spitweiser was there at that time. Ken Weiberg was there at that time. Herb Meislick, who subsequently taught at City College, was there. Who were some of the other people around? I had friends in the Elderfield group, Al Gray and Geraldine Lynch, at that time her name was. In our group, Al Wolf was in our group at that time. Dick Young was in our group. Morty Levitz. And Dern's first wife was in our group. In fact, I took over her lab space when she graduated. Ruth Haynes. They weren't married. Oh, wait a minute. They did get married, I guess, just before she graduated. Bob Odom was there, yeah, toward the end of my stay, right. And Chuck DePue was there. Yeah, that's right. Bob Odom was there. That's right. A fellow named Dick Urban was there. What's become of some of these people, I don't really know. Is Bob Odom still around? Yeah. Okay. They stayed in Brooklyn all that time. So you knew him then when he first came to Brooklyn Town? Yeah. Let's see. There are a lot of other people in the Curtin group that I knew. I knew, what was his name? Albert Harris, was that the fellow who worked with Curtin? And Pete Pollock, they worked with Curtin on the migratory aptitudes and the Curtin Hammett idea. So there were a lot of people. Ed Tristram, who subsequently worked at Merck, was in Curtin's group at that time. Yeah, Hammett, that's an interesting point. I took a course with Hammett. I didn't take it for credit because I didn't need it. And I was very concentrated on my work at that time, and I was trying to make a clear path for myself. So I got to know him in my coursework. He was also a member of my PhD committee. I thought it was terrible. Did you take it?
No, but I
Oh, it was just awful. Well, I mean, he was obviously a very smart man and one of the key figures in the field of physical organic chemistry. Hardly anybody knew as much or had originated as much as he had. But let's face it, he was not very dedicated to teaching, and he'd come in and just sort of natter and stop in mid-sentence and look out the window, and there'd be a pregnant pause. 25 seconds would be ticking off. 30 seconds. Not a word was being said. Everybody was shifting about uneasily. So he was not a dynamically attractive personality. But speaking of Hammett, I did get to know Ernie Grunwald there, who came as postdoc at about that time. I also knew a fellow named Tom. It's very bad to get old. I can't remember names anymore. Another student of Hammett, and I must have known several Hammett students, but I just can't remember the names. I knew students in some of the physical chemistry students. I knew Dick Bernstein slightly. He was ahead of me in graduate school, so we didn't overlap that much. He worked with Tessie Taylor at that time. And I knew a fellow named Howard Reese, who was a statistical mechanicist, worked with Lemaire. Didn't take a course with Lemaire. Too bad about Hammett, because I really grew to appreciate his book only much later. When it became clear to me that I was going to be a physical organic chemist and not a natural products chemist, I said, this is where one should learn this stuff. And it was very much a mentor-student kind of relationship, although he wasn't that much older than I was. He was 7 years older than me. And he came, when I met him, he was still an assistant professor, or maybe just been promoted to a tenured associate professor. So it was very early in his career. He had a huge group, not only at Columbia, but he also had this other group up at HICRA. Katona, yeah. And so it was not easy to get to see him.
What was that? Somebody was sort of funded.
Yeah. A woman named Weil, Ruth Weil, who was Daring's first graduate student, was the wife of a rather wealthy stockbroker, I guess he was. And she was very interested in chemistry, and she wanted to continue working as a chemist, but she didn't want to hire herself out in industry. She wanted to work at home. And basically, I think that they built a laboratory at Katona for Ruth Weil to work at, and under the conditions that that she persuaded Daring to come and be the director of it. And this is my understanding of what that story was. And so they set this up, and they had several people working up there. The person who was the sort of on the scene executive officer of the lab was Larry Knox. And so I got to meet Larry, and he was a student of Bartlett Knox. Yeah, that's right. And Bartlett and Knox also was very became famous again with Daring in the synthesis of propylium ion. Larry was just a hell of a good chemist. He had golden hands, and I don't know whatever became of him. I think he died some time ago, at a fairly early age. It's very rare for a PhD chemist at that time. He was really a very talented guy. And I thought a very nice guy. I liked him, and but I don't know what happened to him. And, in any case, so Daring gave me a lot of flexibility as a graduate student. at the beginning, he was very, what's the word I want? He was very controlled. And not only to me, but also to other students. And he would not hesitate to speak his mind and tell you where you were wrong and why you were never going to amount to anything, and sort of that kind of admonitory presence which left you with no illusions that he was all business and you were not to take this any way but serious. I probably resented that at the time because, well, it was just normal rebellion, you know. But in retrospect, it was probably good for me. Also in retrospect, I realized that he was pushing me very hard during that time. I was at Columbia only less than 2.5 years. And as I look back on that, it was a combination of circumstances. First of all, there was this unexpectedly easy project that I had. And secondly, Goering was very eager for me to get out and get on with it. And third, I was working like a beast. And so that combination added up to a very quick trajectory through Columbia. And the result of it was that I don't really think I knew as much as I should have known when I graduated. Wasn't at that stage, no. GI Bill, almost entirely on the GI Bill, and I was a teaching assistant. So that combination, I could not have gone to graduate school without the GI Bill, and that was true of almost everybody in my graduate class. So you know, that was really Uncle Sam. That was the payback, and well, it was a very special group of guys because, you know, we were all convinced that now's the time. We had spent a couple of 3 years, sometimes more, in the Army. Some of these guys had been in combat. We had people coming back from service in the Pacific with malaria. You know, the lifelong affliction with malaria. I mean, it was a very serious bunch of people. Not much fooling around. And so there was inherent talent, but there was also seriousness of purpose. And the atmosphere was just great. It just couldn't have been better. It was a very, very stimulating environment. Well, a lot of us, you know, we were at a place in our lives where we didn't have any. Just a few years before, we had no dream of ever being in that situation. I thought of, you know, if I was lucky, I would go to college and I'd go to work for a paint company or something like that and be a formulations company. I didn't know anything about any of the rest of this. So, well, picking up on your question of how did I get to be a interested in physical organic chemistry. I wanted to go to Goering wanted me to do postdoctoral work. I didn't have any dream of that when I was a graduate student. I hadn't given it much thought. I thought I'd go and get an industrial job somewhere like people were trying to do. One day Goering walked into the lab and asked, have you given any thought to the rest of your life or some relation like that. I said, well, no, not really. He said, I think you should try to get an academic job. And I never, even the thought had never crossed my mind. And he said, but you'll have to have a postdoc first. And I said, well, okay, how do I do that? And he said, well, there's a very small number of people that you should even consider working for. In fact, I'd say the only one you should consider working for is Woodward. Why don't you write to Woodward and see what he can do for you? So I wrote to Woodward, and in fact, Daring, this is to show you how hard he was pushing me. He had a party at his house in Woodward's honor. Woodward and his first wife, then, I guess it must have been, when she was still out and about. No, it couldn't have been. It must have been his second wife. It was his second wife, I'm pretty sure. Woodward's second wife, Daring's first wife. Daring was living up there on the estate at Katona, where Hickory was. In fact, it was called Hickory. That's the name of the estate. And so he had a party, threw a party for Woodward and Woodward's wife at his home at Hickory. And he invited two other people whose names I should have mentioned. Marshall Berenger, who was a student at that time, and Harold Zeiss, who was also a student at that time, and myself. So the three of us and our wives were invited to the party, and this was a nice social occasion, and he introduced all of us, of course, to the guests, and so I met Woodward then for the first time. And this was supposed to, I think now it was pretty clear that what Daring was trying to do was to cement my credentials with Woodward. Well, it didn't quite work, because after the party, the next day or so, when I saw Daring in the lab, he said, well, you should write to Woodward now and ask him about where he's been on the postdoc. And Woodward wrote back saying that, well, he was very interested, but he really didn't have any funds at that time, the usual excuse you give to somebody when you're not that interested, but that he would be happy to take me to the lab, into the lab, if I could get a fax. So that left it up to me, and Daring then took over and somehow finagled a fellowship, a National Research Council fellowship for me. And I had to apply for it, but he was obviously, as I remember, there was some kind of a local committee. In other words, I don't think that there was some kind of screening that took place at Columbia. This was the days before a general advertisement of openings, where these things would be called to people's attention. And I think that they must have had a flyer go around soliciting applications from students. But apparently not all the students knew about this. I certainly didn't. And the first thing I knew was sometime, I don't know, within that month sometime, I was told that I had been awarded, I'd been recommended for an NRC fellowship, and very soon after that the fellowship came through. So those were real plums at the time, very rare, and a great privilege to have it, and no strings attached. It was a portable thing, so you could go wherever you want. So, in the meantime, but before this had happened, there was something else I should tell you about. And that is, again, this is in accord with this tradition of everything being done under the table, you know, who you know. There was, I was called into Goering's office sometime during my third year of graduate school. And he introduced me to a man whose name I won't mention to you, who was the chairman of a department at a well-known university, who asked me whether I would mind coming up to his department to with the possibility of receiving an offer for an academic job. This was while the Woodward thing was still in abeyance and I didn't know about the fellowship. So I went to this interview. I spent all day there. They made me the offer. And I was mulling this over, and then almost immediately after that, on the heels of that, came this thing from the NRC fellowship. So I decided, you know, in retrospect, perhaps unwisely, or probably wisely, to turn down the offer of an academic job. Now, this is a pretty good place. And in those days, or even now, people don't do that very often, which just goes to show you how naive I was. But I talked to Goering about it, and he said, well, if that's what you want to do, I think you really should. I felt very diffident about taking the job at that stage. I was really pretty darn ignorant. I wanted to do natural products chemistry, and I was not prepared for it. I hadn't been immersed in that atmosphere. So I went to Woodward, and I stayed there for a year, and I worked on a problem in the alkaloid field, and I was surrounded by all these hotshots who knew all about natural products. And not only was Woodward there, but Fieser was there, very active in natural products. Gilbert Stork was there. Marshall Gates was immersed in the total synthesis of morphine at that time. Dick Turner was working on steroids. I mean, it was a hotbed. It was the place to do natural products in this whole country. In the world, probably. So I soaked up that atmosphere for a year, and the Goering, yeah, it came out, yeah, the Woodward stuff, no, never was published, along with a lot of other Woodward postdocs and theses. I mean, the Harvard Chemistry Library is full of Woodward students' theses, which consist of a very long, very detailed, beautifully concise, imaginative, creative, a brilliant introduction. That's the problem. And then the results, which really frequently didn't work out.
Well, we're out here. and they shook the rat, and they lost in the bowwood, but also it sold it now. The lugs and the shiwa flag nearly produced me. Yeah, it sold it up. I'm not going to be able to do it.